Went downstairs and drank a cup.
Your son made his choice.
And you made your choice, Detective. Today you choose to pursue a vendetta against me. Against my family.
Detective, your position offers you far more opportunity for arrogance than safety.
Do not confuse luck with skill. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, our New Year's edition of the show, episode 229. My name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined tonight by Brian, not the car wash Dunaway.
Well, not the car wash. Hey, did you guys hear? There's a big sale now at the Chinatown Sunglasses Hut. 20% off for all triads. We all got some. You'll be totally lame if you don't go get some. And, oh, black suit and some pomade.
All right. We'll leave it at that.
All the triads were wearing the same freaking thing.
Yeah. Are there multiple triads or is there just a triad? I don't know how it works.
I couldn't put triad. It would have sounded funny.
Yeah, well, you're right. I don't know how that works. Also with us, Randy, I don't remember arcades being that exciting in 1998. Jordan.
Hello, Scott. Brian. Happy New Year.
Did
I used to have a side job making fake passports?
No, dude. True story. Do tell, yeah.
I learned there are three keys to being great at this job. One, every single part of your workspace / loft has to be devoted to your craft. Two, you have to keep your gun and only method of self-defense in the stupidest place possible. And three, when you're doing a difficult technical job by yourself, you have to wear Victoria's Secret from head to toe. I was so good at this job.
I'll bet. Cornered the market. Finally with us, Brian, got a gun in that suitcase, Ibbot.
Oh, I totally get it. Because Chow Yun-Fat didn't want to kill the kid, they called in the new guys to replace him. So yeah. Those are the replacement killers. Yeah. Wait a minute. But then Chow and Mira Sorvino kill the replacements. So that makes them the replacement killers. Okay, cool. Hole. Now that totally makes sense. Hold on. Chow Yun-Fat doesn't keep any spare magazines of bullets with him. So when he pulls out fresh guns, those are the replacement killers. Oh, I hated this movie.
Right? No, don't say those words.
Actually, the original people being replaced are the ones that they kill invading her loft.
Okay? Oh, good point. Those were the original replacement killers.
So Danny Trejo isn't replacing Yun-Fat Choi.
Yeah.
Danny Trejo is replacing the killers that failed to kill Yun-Fat Choi.
Okay. Yeah. Most useless title ever.
It's pretty dumb.
I agree with Ibbot.
Pretty dumb.
I love it. I love that title.
You're a big fan of the replacement. I like that. Well, okay. So let's just
titles, and this is a good title.
Let's get Fletcher out of the way. Not that we want to get him out of the way.
Brian.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's let Fletcher explain, and then we will answer the great question everyone's been wondering. Does Scott's favorite crime action movie of the 90s hold up for him? We'll find out in a minute after Scott Fletcher.
The Replacement Killers. When hitman John Lee refuses to kill a police officer's young son, replacement killers are sent in to finish the job and to take care of Lee.
Ooh, okay. All right. All right. Pins and needles here. Mm-hmm. I loved this movie when I saw it in the movie theater. Part of it was because I was completely and 100% enamored with anything that was coming out of Hong Kong. John Woo had just come over and started making movies here. He produced this. And I've told you guys, and I still stand by this, the best Van Damme movie ever is Hard Target. I love it. I love the whole style of it. I love slow motion weirdness. I love the over-the-top comic book kind of style of everything. And I loved the Yun-Fat movies, like The Killer, or is he not The Killer, just is it just The Killer or Killer? Whatever it is. The Chinese movie. I think it's just The Killer. And Hard Boiled is one of the single coolest things I've ever seen in my life.
All better titles than this movie.
This movie, whatever. Replacement Killers is a cool name.
Whatever.
I saw it and I loved it. and I was all in, and I just thought this was amazing. And I, oh my gosh, I can't get enough of this. Please, please make more of these. And I loved, I was so into Crystal Method back then, the band, not the drugs. And so they could do no wrong. And so when this thing opened with that song from that Vegas album, it's just, oh my gosh, I love these guys. And it was so cool. So jump ahead now. We are now, how many years? Geez, 97, 98, 97 would have been.
15, 90, let's say 15.
15 years 15. Later. And it's such a weird time, like started getting MP3s then. Windows 98 was a thing you could buy. You know, like I have a very, very specific imprint. My second daughter was a year old, like all those kind of things just ring back. And I was hanging out with my buddy, Drew, who was all into this stuff with me. So anytime something like this came, we were all up in it. Couldn't wait to do it and see it. So here we are, jump ahead. Is it still my favorite action movie of the 1990s? Maybe.
All that.
Well, thanks for clearing that up.
It might still be. The problem is, it's hard for me to say because, okay, well, what usually happened here. I watched it and went, oh, well, we wouldn't do that today. Or, oh, that's a little rough. Or, oh, that doesn't hold up. You know, things just don't hold up. I don't care how much you revere something. There's really no such thing as something. Something about it is not going to hold up in the future. There's something about, you know, like I can't even watch Indiana Jones, which I can, or Raiders of the Lost Ark, I consider to be a perfect film almost every way. And it holds up so well, but there are a couple of things about it that drive me crazy. And they're things like things that just eat on you after a while, like yelling about the snakes or freaking the French guy going fst, fst, and everyone running after what's his name or him getting hit in the chin with the mirror on the boat, which was such a, and her acting like she didn't know what happened. Like little things, right? They're nitpicky and whatever. Well, this movie is far from what I would consider a perfect movie, but I still really like it. It's super cool. And anytime he wants to spin around in his suit with a couple of pistols in his hands and take on a small army of freaking triad hitmen, sign me up. I thought it was great. So it's a definite maybe.
The whole movie was nothing but just shooting. It should have been called Guns. That's what you do.
You hire him to do that.
Bullets. Should have been called Bullets or something. I don't know. It would have been better name than
lots
that.
Lots of shooting.
Because right, in China, so shooting. Jackie Chan, it was his hands and props. For other people, you know, I don't know, Jet Li, it was all about hands and feet. For Fat, it's all about guns. Like, that is his martial arts.
Here's the thing. Because I was trying to put my finger on what it was that I didn't like about this. And I like Chow Yun-Fat, or Yun-Fat Chow, is, you know, if you do the name in the order. I liked him in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I even liked him in Bulletproof Monk. For whatever reason, in this movie, where I think you needed an actor who would have a little bit more emotion about not wanting to kill that kid and all the internal struggle that you're going through, you don't hire Chow Yun-Fat and his super stoic, emotionless, cold.
Okay. I agree with you right up until you're talking about him laying on that mat looking through that scope, because he has to do the hardest job of acting possible. He doesn't have anybody else in the scene to riff off of. He's being told to do all the acting without using his words. It all has to appear on his face, and I think it's amazing. You really get the conflict, the internal conflict, when he's trying to figure out what to do now that he's realized he doesn't want to pull the trigger.
Well, plus they're fooling with you. Plus they're fooling with you because you still think at that point he's there to kill Merle.
It's after Rucker.
Yeah, he's supposed to kill Merle and not, you don't know. You just see the kid come into the scene. He's like, oh, I can't kill this guy with his kid around. Then you don't realize, oh no, it was the kid the whole time.
I agree with you about like the stoicism. For example, this was during a time when still Western audiences thought everybody was a Japanese guy about to commit seppuku, and they, you know, so it gets played that way. But saying that he's so stoic that he's not putting the performance through, I disagree with.
Mm. Okay,
he did know English. That's the other thing. This is his first American role ever, or American film role. And there's a bunch of trivia talking about how Sorvino, who was fluent in Mandarin, would kind of help him because he didn't really know what to do, had to really go through his lines hard. I don't know if that impacted the kind of performance we got here, but as a guy who had binged on his Chinese and Hong Kong work, it was the same guy. I mean, that's who I was getting. And so for me, that never was a problem because that was his stereotype, is to be so overly stoic that you knew just inside there was some emotion in there someplace, but he was rarely going to let it show, and he would much rather spin around with his gun and shoot you slow motion in the face.
Right.
And that I got plenty of here. I
think that was my main problem. Usually in a movie, I can have one of two things. I can either have lots of gunplay, or I can have some emotion. This tried to have both, and I couldn't get into the emotional part because 2 seconds later, they were doing some crazy jive, handgun jive that I was like, well, that's cool and all, but you totally couldn't do that. And how many times did he shoot? Oh, how convenient. He runs out of bullets now, right as they get to each other's face. Click, click.
Okay, click. So what I'm doing right now is I'm listening to somebody who did not build an appreciation. I'm not saying you have to or that it's good, but build an appreciation for the Hong Kong stuff that came before, because that is the things you're mentioning, these tropes, this run out of bullets at the exact same time, that kind of face-off moment, no pun intended, that is all total John Woo, total Chun Yao Fat, all those people.
And yes, it's a trope, but it's also a storytelling device, which is almost a sort of comparative narrative. Where you're saying, rather than having people talking and debating, I'm using guns to show them coming to a stalemate or what have you. There's something deeper there than just these two guys are shooting bullets.
It's just hard to appreciate if you don't like or have seen. I'm not trying to come off as hipster here because I really am not.
Oh, no. Go ahead, Mr. Hip.
But watching, seeing all that Hong Kong stuff and all the... the versions I all saw weren't dubbed either. They were straight up, Chinese and then had subtitles. The guns are so symbolic of so many things in those movies. And it's almost like people I give a hard time that are really into anime. I feel like I should take a dose of my own medicine here because I struggle with anime, dude. I just like, why is this cool? This is the dumbest. Why is that pink horse a dirty old man half the time? And then the other time he's poking a guy in the face or I don't understand what's happening in a lot of anime.
What is that?
And it frustrates the hell out of me. Anime does. But maybe, just maybe, if I had consumed the right prerequisite anime before the lead up to the big explosion over here with anime, maybe those appreciations would come through. And I feel like my appreciation as of the gun as a symbol and as a device in Hong Kong movies, specifically within that system of filmmaking, leads me to be more appreciative of it here. So when people would see, I remember when we saw Hard Target in the theaters back in the 90, whatever. I was in love with that thing, and other people would see it and go, what the hell is even going on? And I think that's the break. Like, it's just it's a taste or something. And I just love it.
This movie visually is beautiful. I loved how it looked. I loved that Buddha was everywhere. I loved that. And I loved, the gunplay was fun.
Yeah.
But as far as feeling anything, I was constantly taken out of the movie because I'm constantly thinking, why does she have to be working on his passport? I mean, because anybody could have pulled off a freaking photo and put it, didn't have any talent. And then I'm like, and if his Buddha, his monk friend already had a passport, why didn't we just do that to begin with? This whole thing is just, where are we going with this?
Yeah.
And right. I felt that a lot.
I want to argue with one thing with Scott, and that is, if I can tell you the story of the whole movie, and I'm not saying summarize, I mean tell you the whole movie in one sentence, it really doesn't have a story.
Oh, I agree. It's not. This is light on story. There's no question about it.
Right.
I mean, it's like, how complicated is it? Well, guy was supposed to kill somebody, didn't do it. Now we're after him, and they sent new dudes
to do
that.
She gets caught in the crossfire, so he takes her with him.
Yeah, it's a small paragraph. It's 140 characters or less. I completely agree with that. It's not why I go to these, because I feel like you can almost do that with all of them.
Right.
It's more about this weird violence ballet. It's hard to explain.
Right. No, I agree. It's beautiful in its violence. I agree. And even I loved you can almost see the very specific times they sat down and said, okay, so we're making a movie. We're making this movie, and it's about, this one guy trying to get out of this deal that he had made. And so what we're going to do, okay, we're going to have a shootout. Where at? Car wash. It'd be really cool. We have like those big rag things flapping back and forth. It'll be really cool looking. And all the way down to, there's going to be Buddhas, and there's going to be rain, and there's going to be, but it felt very, like you said, it's a violence ballet.
So Antoine Fuqua, right? Director here. He's most famous probably because it won the most awards for Training Day, directed that. but also real turds like Olympus Has Fallen, which is fun, but a real turd. King Arthur's not great. The Equalizer, I enjoyed that, but it's not great. I mean, it's the first half is kind of amazing, actually. The last half is kind of
Tears of the Sun. Oh, that was the Bruce Willis one.
Yeah, the army one or whatever.
Right.
Secret, whatever, the SEAL team thing.
Army.
So he's done some things, is my point. His second movie ever, Replacement Killers. I think he did a pretty damn good job for a thing that was his second project and, you know, was taking the... I mean, it was produced by John Woo and had this legendary actor from Hong Kong in it. It's kind of a tall order. I mean, that's kind of a... That's a hard job. And Rooker can be a real pain in the ass to work with, so he couldn't have been easy. But my point is...
You're going past so many things I want to talk about.
All right, go stop. Go. Go.
Hold up.
So let's... Okay, so put a bookmark on Rooker because I want to come back to him. Fuqua, you say he's responsible for Training Day. Can we talk about Training Day for a moment?
Yeah.
Has everybody seen that movie?
I haven't.
No. Yeah. Remember? No.
Oh, that's okay, right. You haven't.
Right. No.
Well, there's no way we'll ever sack it. And I'll tell you, I would veto it hard because it is painful to watch. Yeah. It is so uncomfortable. And I have a hard time naming another director who's capable of taking you into a feeling as an audience like this. Maybe Christopher Nolan can get you there. You know, like with Memento, or no, Insomnia. That's the movie I'm thinking of.
Yeah,
but with Training Day, the feeling is this nervousness and discomfort and fear that Ethan Hawke's character comes to feel more and more and more as the movie's going on. And man, you really feel it, and you wonder what are the tricks he's using that are getting me to this feeling. And I realized watching this movie, a bunch of those tricks are there, are in. This one, Replacement Killers.
Sure.
And their camera angles and their the use of slow-mo to make sure that you see what the director wants you to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I was surprised watching this movie this time that it didn't fill me with the excitement that it had years ago. Man, yeah. Maybe that's just me.
That's just time too. I mean, these things don't, you know,
I used to always, I'm saying I promise you if you made me watch Training Day and I don't want to. If you made me watch it, I promise you I would feel all those emotions because it's so visceral.
Well, I just wonder, I mean, a lot of that, it lays at the feet of Denzel Washington and Zippy Boy over there. What's his name? Ethan Hawke, who really are amazing in that. And the material, they rise above that material. People always complain, oh, why did it take that movie for Denzel to win? Well, it's because it's an insane job on a kind of mediocre film project. I mean, there's nothing too crazy about what that movie is content-wise. But he just takes it and owns it. So I don't know. It's a weird thing that I have a love for Fuqua movies, but mainly because he's just coming from that pedigree of that kind of John Woo kind of thing. And I wish there was more of it. I also wish, here's a wish. Okay. Here, I wish upon a star that somebody would resurrect, Fat Chow. From the dearth of the 15-year career he's had since this, he deserves better than that. He should be in a ton of really badass stuff, and there's no reason like Tarantino couldn't get off his arse and give him a call and say, yo, Yun Fat Chow, come over here and rub my feet, and then we'll make a movie together or whatever. Like, I really want new Chow movies. Like, the guy is insane. He's so cool to watch. I just love it. And part of it he looks like an accountant. You know, like he's not the typical ripped looking kung fu man.
Right.
Right.
He looks like a normal Chinese dude. But
and the last kind of mainstream thing he did was Pirates of the Caribbean in 2007.
And he was good in that otherwise terrible film.
Yes. Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Hasn't there been talk of a Crouching Tiger sequel? Isn't that
it's being something made.
That's been floated around?
It's being made.
And I talked about at least
I've been thinking a lot about Crouching Tiger because of Replacement Killers.
He's not in it, by the way. I just want to mention that he's not.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. It's some new thing that's got nothing to do with any of the current or the previous characters. Anyway, sorry, Randy, go ahead.
Seeing Replacement Killers with fresh eyes has made me think a lot about Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, because I remember that was a really challenging movie for me as a viewer. I remember after I watched the movie, then I read a review by Roger Ebert that really made a lot of sense to me, where Ebert was talking about how Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon leaned on a lot of Chinese tropes that Western audiences didn't know.
Yeah.
And like had never seen.
The floating ninja across the, you know, dancing across rooftops and all that kind of stuff was very new.
And and so Western audiences were being told, go see this movie. It's beautiful. It's epic. And then they would see it and they'd come out scratching their heads like, oh, so is that what they're doing over in China? And so Roger Ebert was like, it failed its mission if its mission was to explain to people so that they understand what they're seeing. And of course, what movie ever does that, right? No. What movie says while it's making itself, oh, and I'm going to be a flagpole movie that explains all these things to some foreign audience.
The ones that are flagpoles never usually know that they are.
Right.
It's after the fact that people realize. Yeah.
And so coming back to this movie, I was kind of surprised when I realized that it was made as late as it was. I kept thinking, oh, this is a late 80s movie. No, it's a late 90s movie. Mm-hmm. But I kept thinking it was a late 80s movie because it seems to be really pushing you to look and think and catch what they're doing here because this is how we do it now or whatever. Yeah. And actually, there's tons of movies you could have seen before this.
Yeah.
And it's actually kind of... I'm sorry to say, Scott, it's kind of blasé.
Look, you're not wrong. But it gave an opportunity for two things to happen. Chun Fat Yao, Fat Chung Young. to swing around in sunglasses, a tailored suit, and two pistols and lay waste. Okay, option number one, fulfilled. Great, awesome. Second option, or the thing two that's rad, is that Danny Trejo gets to walk down a hallway with a big machine gun and look
in
badass.
Slow motion so many times.
Yes, all that stuff is great. Like, I just, the visualness of it, the Yakuza element feel of everything. I know it's Japanese, not Chinese. But my point is, like, that whole underground mobster Asian thing is so great, and I just can't get enough of it. So, for me, it holds up in that
stuff.
Way.
It is the Yakuza stuff. I really like that.
Yeah.
Just
how about a new one?
It just felt like there was something so missing from this, and I don't know exactly what it was.
I can't put it all on
Chow Yun-Fat's shoulders.
No,
I'll tell you what wasn't missing.
His broad and ample shoulders, by the way. But go ahead, Dunaway.
Riff Raff was not. he was in this.
Riff Raff was not in this. The guy that's like Riff Raff. He's the what's his name in this? Gonzo or
right.
Oh yeah, right. Paul or Loco.
Loco, yeah.
No, right. No.
He's that stereotype riffraff character. Yeah.
Okay. We're talking about Clifton Collins Jr.
Mm-hmm. He's one of our Star Trek connections, by the way.
That's right.
He used to be back at this time in his career. He was going by the name Clifton Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I don't know why anyone named Clifton Gonzalez would change his name to Clifton Collins Jr.
Yeah.
But Junior here, man, is he good at portraying a piece of crap.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's a very specific era of piece of crap, too.
Yeah.
Very cornrow, you know.
Nothing wrong with cornrows, but, you know, out of context.
Well, no, yeah. You know what I mean, though? Like, there's something that's a very 90s gangster thing he's trying to pull off here. And it's super over the top, just like ridiculous.
Gonzalez, man.
Yeah. That's great.
I hated him so much.
He's an interesting
dude.
The
characters he played, I hated so much.
And they're all like this, most of his early stuff.
Yeah, they really are.
Yeah.
By the way, in a movie in 2003, I think it is. Let's see here. I saw this. 2003 called Undefeated. He played a character named Loco.
Oh, what?
Oh, typecast.
That is Polo Loco.
Can we go
crazy?
Can we go around the table?
Yeah,
I got a question for you because this is, and I have an answer, but I want to hear yours. Actor who plays bad guys that you hate so much that you hate the actor as a result.
Oh,
and he might be a great person outside off the silver screen, but because of these characters, you just think he's horrible and you hate him.
The guy in Happy Gilmore that played the bad guy was also on Star Trek. He's the voice of a million things. He was in the second and third season of Boardwalk Empire.
Raider.
That guy. Yeah, I hate that guy. And I'm sure he is the nicest human being on the earth.
I don't know.
It's Christopher McDonald.
Yeah, Christopher McDonald. Brian's like, I'm not so sure. Maybe he is a douche.
It even had a name in that movie. Shooter McGavin. Oh my gosh.
Shooter McGavin.
I hate him so much.
I don't even like him when he's a nice guy. He was even he made me angry as the voice of the FBI dude in Iron Giant. He played the guy that had diarrhea because he put stuff in his Coco. Anyway, that guy, ugh, he's such a bastard. Yeah.
You know, BJ Novak for me.
Oh, yes.
Especially after watching the last couple episodes of Newsroom on HBO. BJ, and I'm sure he's the nicest guy in the world, but Tina and I were even remarking, like, he's got to be a real asshole in life, man. Yeah, I mean, just how well he does, so, or should I say,
on The A-hole. Office. He was such an a-hole on The Office.
He was.
And see, because I hate The Office, I won't watch The Office. So I had to just look him up. I'm like, oh, right, him.
By the way, I've
seen him a tiny bit, like he was in an episode of Community, I guess. Like, so I don't have any emotional reaction to him. That's interesting.
Mm, yeah, he drives me up the wall.
You look at his Google images. He looks like he's still a jerk. Just and a those are just like walking jerk. On the red carpet images.
And there's no way he's probably a nice guy. He gets things done. Pompous, he was an executive smirking. Producer on stuff. He writes things. Like he's a respected dude in Hollywood. But just look at him. It's like you want to kick him in the face.
Oh, he went to Harvard. Oh, of course he did.
Of course
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he's the nicest guy.
Yeah, growing up with the name BJ. Right. What?
I hate to follow that up with an obvious one. Alan Rickman. I always hate that guy.
Alan Rickman.
Oh, I love Alan Rickman.
So he plays it good. They always put him in the role of the bad guy, and I always believe it. He looks like he would just, even in real life, he would just stab you in the back.
You know what you need to see? You need to see January Man.
Yeah.
Kevin Kline film where Alan Rickman's his roommate, and he's... He plays a much nicer guy than he usually plays.
Right.
But he really is Snape. Like, you can't ever let go of that.
Yeah, never let go of Snape for as long never as you can.
Keep your hands on Snape at all times.
Just
John McClane.
Because it's December, I watched Love Actually the other day, and Alan Rickman's role in that
movie.
He's
so good in that.
Yeah, he's
called upon to be funny in a crappy situation.
Yeah.
And he does it pretty well, but the movie itself is way, way overwrought. Anyway, the answer for all time to this question is Ray Liotta.
Ray Liotta is
is just evil. Like there's no even in a movie where he's like Operation Dumbo Drop, I feel like behind the scenes, this guy was holding a knife to people's necks and, you know, ripping off the money carriers. Like, I just feel like everything, like, there's no way the actual Ray Liotta is a good person because of his roles, because of how he is performed.
I want that on a t-shirt right away. There's no way the real Ray Liotta is a good person.
I'm so frustrated by Ray Liotta that I can't like the movie Goodfellas. Everybody likes that movie but me, because I just spend the whole movie realizing he's never going to die. He's never going to die. I want to see Ray Liotta die. He's not going to die.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting take on that movie. That movie's amazing, but I hate him in it. Oh, yeah, I hate him. He's horrible. I hate him. You know who somebody you're supposed to hate, and I just can't bring myself to do it, is Michael Shannon. I know we're supposed to hate him in most things he's in. Mm-hmm. I can't do it. Even in his worst role, he's so compelling to me. I just want to be around him. Oh.
All right. So we're talking about... Man of Steel.
Zod. Yeah.
Thing about Michael Shannon is his eyes are way far apart.
Sorry, go ahead.
His eyes are way far apart.
Yeah, they are.
I hate anybody, right?
They are.
Seriously, his face is kind of like Stewie from Family Guy.
He's intimidating as hell. You know who he looks like, and this will blow your mind. The minute I say it, you're going to just go, "What the crap?" He is like a very young, mostly grumpy David Letterman. So next time you look at his face, you're going to go.
It's the lines around his mouth. You're right.
Weird.
Yeah.
Very Letterman. Anyway.
Huh.
I'm a
you're
huge fan.
Me out right now.
I don't trust anybody whose lower lip is like super small and tucked under their upper lip. it's a thing. It's just, I don't trust him.
All right.
Everybody looks like Richard Kiel in a lot of photographs.
Oh, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, he does.
Like
does everybody
Kiel.
Love Boardwalk Empire?
I love it. Holy crap, I love it.
Well, I love the first two seasons of that, and then.
You just kind of
season
fell
three,
away.
We just didn't get into it, so we stopped watching it. But I think
I'm in three now, and I'm digging it.
Now that it's over, maybe we have to get back into it.
Yeah. I've learned to ask, because I ran into a coworker the other day who I hadn't talked to in a long time, and he was like, "I've been meaning to tell you, man, I hated True Detective." I'm like, "Whoa,
what? Wow!
I didn't know I was the sounding board for these things." Okay, and. So anyway, it's, you know, not everything is universally loved.
No, of course not. And if it was, I don't want to live in a world where we all like the same things anyway. Like The Replacement Killers, which I like quite a bit. So Mira Sorvino, we saw her last in Mimic, and that movie actually came out the year before this.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting. She went from kind of top dog to second banana a year apart. And then I honestly really don't know what happened to her after these two movies. I mean, I know she's around and she does stuff.
The Romy and Michelle was after this, right?
Yes, definitely after this. It had to have been.
But then what? Yeah. Nothing? It's all like bit parts and stuff. Like she, I don't know what happened there. I felt like her career was taken off. I think she's charming and interesting and good looking and like all the things you want. She's got a good pedigree. Her dad was a good actor. Speaking of Goodfellas, freaking Paul Sorvino tearing it up.
I kind of feel like Romy and Michelle's high school reunion was what she and Lisa Kudrow were made to do. And you, where do you go from there? Like, it's just that, that's it.
Well,
that's,
there should be more. There should be more.
They, I guess there could have been three more Romy and Michelle. Romy and Michelle go to Hawaii or something.
Oh, sure. Oh, that was poised for a franchise, wasn't it?
Dunaway, I don't want to ruin your night or anything, but there is a Minority Report connection here.
yeah, of course there is.
Patrick Kilpatrick is one of the bad dudes. He's the white-haired thug in the car wash who gets shot from below. He was the puke stick victim in Minority Report. Got poked with the puke stick.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was. It's funny because I remember him very distinctly because I remember thinking, "Guy looks like such an asshole."
Yeah.
And so I guess it must have been the subconscious water pool mind that I have.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Okay, let's talk about that now. There was a lot of rain in this movie, and it would happen at times where it was supposed to be a poignant moment of him putting some kind of ancient Chinese powder on his shoulder to heal it. Or
that was great.
Chinese
that's such a
powder,
that's
huh?
such a trope. That's yeah, such a trope.
Very
in this movie
tropey.
Of you know, he's going to rub some dirt on it, or he's going to pull her leg and snap it back into place. Mm-hmm. It's very... hands
right.
Like some ancient, there's an ancient ritual of.
It's funny because I'm watching, I'm knee deep in Arrow, just finished the first season.
Yeah.
And that is relied upon so much in Arrow. Whenever Oliver Queen gets shot or poisoned or whatever, it's the mysterious jar of Chinese herbs that automatically cure him from anything.
It's all his island bullshit, isn't it? It's all that island crap keeps coming back. And
In Replacement Killers, is this supposed to be some sort of redemption trope as well? Are we supposed to get the feeling that the only way to get out of this horrible mess is to slowly cure all of the little wounds and so forth?
Probably not. And look, if you believe everything in all movies has some symbology, maybe, but I don't think so in this. I think this is just, oh, that hurt. Crack the lightning. Yeah, that's cool, man. That's cool. And then they move on. I don't think it's anything more than that.
I don't think so either. I think just put him in a position of, you know, he's weaker here, or maybe he's not. Maybe he can overcome it. I don't know.
Yeah, he's just tough. He's just tough.
Which reminds me of a trope that I adore.
Ooh, do tell.
Dude, when you, man, last bullet comes out of the gun, that gun loses all value.
Yeah.
Yeah,
stolen. Can you imagine what it would be like to just be, you know, cruising through Los Angeles at night and see some guns just laying out on the sidewalk because... there'd been a gunfight a few seconds earlier. They just got thrown down.
They're like the Reaper in that new Blizzard game that's being made, the shooter game. He just chucks those things at the side and pulls out a pair of new ones, man.
So my point, the reason I was reminded about this trope of throwing away your guns is that there really isn't anything symbolic about that. And that's too bad because it becomes a dumb after a while. You're like, I have just watched people cast aside $30,000 worth of guns.
Yeah, it becomes very impractical. Mm-hmm. And
this is insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's no reason. There's no symbole.
There's no symbole.
No symbolies. Nope. No symbolies anywhere.
Well, and it's got time to reload a magazine when you've got shooting to do.
Yeah.
Unless you got that one special bullet for the very end.
Right.
Yeah. And you got all.
You need all your time
world.
To spin around.
This is the gun. Hold on. I'm on my fourth gun, fifth gun. Oh, here's the one with the bullet in it. Oh, yeah. I'll use this one.
So supposedly this movie was actually set up to be a starring role for Chaz Palminteri. He is the, where's the monies, Homer? Where's the monies? The Chinese mafia element in the original script was actually more of a conventional Italian mafia thing. And that all got scrapped and then they started writing this Asian stuff around it. So I'm fine with the way it turned out, but that could have been interesting. A little more straight up Italian mobster deal. I don't know. That sounds really
interesting. Yeah.
Sounds kind of boring though, because then all the weird slow-mo and the other stuff isn't as acceptable for some reason, and perhaps it's just full-on racist that I think that, but I just think that stuff works better in Chinese based movies and characters than it would if it was just Chaz Palminteri going, I'm gonna spin around real slow in this car wash and I'm gonna, you know, something about like that.
One of the great moments in this movie that comes up more and more is a trope, by the way.
Oh really? Well then I should play this.
It's called Back to Back Badass, where you have two people who are both armed and they stand back to back while they're fighting.
Yes. May as well call it the Woo, right?
Well, yeah, that was the first that's time a total Woo trademark, yeah.
But it's not something you see a lot with mobster movies. Mm. Mobster movies are usually one guy standing facing you can, you know, like he's showing himself as a target to everybody, like Scarface.
Yeah.
Whereas this is a trope that kind of belongs in Asian movies where you present the narrowest target possible by turning sideways. Since you're sideways, your buddy's sideways, we're back to back, right?
Yeah.
Right. Man, every time this happened, I thought about if me and a friend, let's just say Scott Johnson and I, found ourselves in a firefight and had no choice but to fight back, I highly doubt that we would be able to arrange ourselves so beautifully.
Oh, no, it would be.
Really do. No. I think we would be like kicking
out. Coordinate.
Well, first of all, let's be a little realistic here. You're no Mira Sorvino.
I know and, this. This I know.
No who's no Mira Sorvino in this relationship?
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure that out. I'm thinking maybe Randy. I think he could pull off some Victoria's Secrets.
Well, I was in that movie, the Tidy Whitey Aphrodite.
Right, right.
The Tidy
I got another trope
whitey.
As well.
Oh, do you? Go.
Yeah, yeah. All big drug deals always go down at the loading docks. I mean, if the cops want to bust a drug deal, just hang out at the loading docks.
Yeah, just have a camera down there.
It'll come.
Yeah, so all the cameras, some
why
movement out of the docks.
Police station at the loading docks.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a great idea. You might actually deter crime at the loading docks. That's amazing. All right, I wrote down here. Oh, something about what? Oh, the late 90s digital camera that she was using.
Yes.
Do you remember when digital cameras, A, were huge and fat, B, had battery life worse than anything in the world, and C, you'd take a picture and there was a please wait thing on the screen while you had to wait for it? Right. Amazing. And what were those, like 320 pixels when you pooped them out?
Oh, God,
that much. Yeah, her whole apartment, like Randy was saying at the beginning, made absolutely no sense to me, her whole layout. Because she had, like, in the back, first of all, she had everything digital. But then she also had negatives. She had a whole negative room. And that all those negatives were the same picture. I mean, it was just picture after picture of the same thing. So I think there's like some kind of weirder story going on here that they told.
And,
but.
I mean, I've developed pictures in my life. You want your darkroom to be as small as possible.
Yep.
Right.
Like just the bare size closet you need to do your work. And her darkroom looked like it was like a whole other apartment.
It was vast.
It was a hallway with books. It was like a library. It was weird.
How many pictures was she taking? Because I swear, all the negatives. I mean, she had like at least 3 years worth of negatives just hanging in that room. It made no sense.
It was all flavor stuff.
Unless she was insane. And I would like to go deeper into that.
It was probably more of like, these negatives are really cool. I'm going to decorate my library with them.
I love it. Unless she was insane and that's the movie you want to see is the one where she's insane.
No, that's the movie we did see. No, listen, because, okay, when he comes across her, okay, like I said, she's wearing all Victoria's Secret while she's cutting together fake passports. It's ridiculous. There's no explaining her place in the universe except that she's a crazy person who's somehow gotten away from her handlers.
Well, she's making IDs though. She got a little job going and pays the rent. She keeps the
He comes along and she's instantly wielding guns. Like before he ever gets before the killers ever show up, she's got her hands all over guns and there's guns they're gonna be fired soon. Crazily. Then rather than just get on a motorcycle and go to Nevada, like any sane person would do after surviving that thing, she hangs out with the guy who brought all the crazy into her life.
Right.
It's a crazy decision by her. I think Brian's onto something, and there's a very interesting movie there.
Well, okay, maybe. The best part of the movie for me, the one where I felt the emotion that Brian Ibbett is finding lacking in this movie, was him in the photo booth and him revealing that it was the kid he was supposed to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they handled like the snapshots in the booth, the red, the coloring, the way the music was handled, the kinds of flashbacks those were, I thought that was really artsy fartsy and really worked on me.
Right, right.
Like that a lot.
I can see that.
I'll give you that, sure.
Give me the photo booth. That's all you got to give me. Rest of it.
I was almost in. It was almost, that's one of those points where it's like, I'm almost in because it did. I didn't realize he was supposed to be killing the kid. And I'm like, oh, but then 2 seconds later, lights out, Danny Trejo busted in on a pinball machine. All the lights are out, but the arcade machines are still on. Everybody has absolutely disappeared. And that was just too many things for my brain to go, why is the arcade lights still on if the lights overhead are off? And why? Where'd all the people go? The people couldn't have got out that fast. What's going on here?
Yeah.
And so
it's possible that that can all take you out. I see what you're saying.
Right.
I always felt bad for the lady that got shot in the crossfire in the parking garage, though. Man, what a raw deal.
Right. Just backing out her car and
I don't know why
wrong place, wrong time.
I remember it hit me at the time as kind of harsh, but now, I don't know, that really got me. Like, oh,
usually,
gosh.
And usually when you've got a character like that, I mean, their purpose is, you know, they're held as a hostage, right? And it's just to show you how bad the bad guys are.
Yeah,
right.
This case, it's really just wrong place, wrong time, and there's no point to it.
No, I mean, they felt bad. I could tell, like, Fat felt bad and everybody, but the My bad guys, I mean, bad. I guess it did its job making the bad guys just seem like no soul, killing machines.
Right. When they killed, when Trejo came up, and I guess it was Trejo or the other guy, one, they came up to the cop after they blew the cop car to pieces and they come up and shoot him when he's upside down.
Oh, right.
That was kind of effective.
That was intense. Mm-hmm. It was that scene because the cops came from the other side, right?
Yeah. You see the feet. Yeah, exactly.
That was rough. Yeah. Where can I go to see a matinee screening of Mr. Magoo in theaters?
That was fantastic.
Yeah, what is that? It's like a Mr. Magoo World War II film or something.
That was great.
So they came out and you saw what the theater was supposed to be. I don't think the interior matched the exterior, but you saw that the theater was supposed to be one of these places in Hollywood where they show like film festivals and stuff for families or whatever.
Sure.
And like the marquee actually said children's film festival or something like that to explain what was going on inside. I was actually impressed with the continuity there.
So in a way we just got lucky that it was the Jim Backus epic Mr. Magoo.
That was my favorite episode part of the movie because Magoo was in the movie watching a
in the
movie.
Theater. Yeah.
He was confused because Mr. Magoo's always confused, but he was confused because he thought he was back in the war because the movie he was watching was full of violence and shooting, but the people in the audience of the movie that were watching it were also confused by the gunfire that was happening in reality.
Yeah.
And in the movie.
Yeah. So right. it was pretty good.
It was like an Inception kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. 1957's Magoo's Private War. He plays an officious civil defense coordinator. Oh, kids love those. Officious civil defense coordinator whose panic response is triggered by the premiere of a science fiction movie. Most of the cartoon takes place inside the theater where actual newsreel footage is juxtaposed with Magoo's ineffectual, if self-congratulatory, attempts to organize a totally static audience.
It's weird to hear him referred to as Magoo. Like not Magoo. As Mr. Magoo.
Magoo.
Magoo went into the room. Like, no, Mr. Magoo. Mr.
Mr.
It's Mr. to you, buddy. Before we go to clips here, I did want to mention, we cannot go without mentioning that German actor whose name is, I got to find it.
Oh, the other replacement killer.
Jürgen Ponchnow. We talked about him last week, actually. He was supposedly.
Jürgen Poncherelli.
Yeah, he was supposed. He was supposedly up for the last week's freaking drag. What was his name? The dude.
Ivan Drago?
Yes, the Ivan Drago character. Yeah. Really? So, yeah. Remember, we discounted that list thinking it was all BS, but he was on the list. Anyway, I liked him in this.
It makes a little sense.
A little bit, but I liked him in this because he was constantly apologizing to the head of the Yakuza or whatever they are, the triad, apologizing for why they let him slip through their fingers yet again.
He's the guy with the complexion that looks like Surface of Mars.
Adama. Like Adama, two different Adamas beat the shit out of each other, and what was left was that.
Yes, exactly.
That's amazing. Yeah. Anyway, I really like that guy. He's compelling. Every time he's in something, I just go, oh, yeah, he's cool. And he's still working, still doing stuff.
Can we just hit one trope before we go to clips?
Of course we can, right here.
Stormtrooper shooting. How are these the replacement killers? Seriously.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
Right. You bring in these guys in slow motion. They're walking in from a train station or airport or something, and they're wearing the long leather dusters, and they got sunglasses on at night. Yeah. And you are portraying to me these two people who are so efficient and so good at their job that they don't even have to lift a finger. That freaking Chunyao Fat is dead. He's already dead. And then for the rest of the movie, they couldn't hit the side of a freaking barn.
Yeah, they were pretty. They were pretty bad. It right, still works for me, you know.
And it's goofy because they're in the movie theater. They've got the laser dot sitting on the kid for a good minute.
It's maybe.
What are you waiting for? Yeah. I mean, are you, you know, if you're supposed to be the cold blooded replacement killers, just do it.
Yeah.
Trying to line it up. Well, no, maybe not that part of the head. Yeah. Maybe a little over to the left. It's like, oh, come on.
That guy, the other dude.
Want to ruin his popcorn.
The other guy makes a pretty menacing face. But again, when you give him the guns, they seem to be a little bit out of it. I mean, whatever. They worked for me. Like you said, it's like an arcade game. You're just having a good time.
But you say whatever. This is a pretty gnarly trope.
Yeah.
It's pretty much undoes the whole point of the film, that these guys are so bad at doing their job that they're supposed to be.
The one job they had, yeah. That's fair. But how else are you going to have Merle hustle out of there and have what's his name take a bullet?
I don't know. I was thinking about that. Like, how would I handicap these guys so that we have a movie? Yeah. And I don't know. I guess actually handicap them? The replacement killers come in wheelchairs? I don't know.
Broken arm, stuff like that. Yeah. All right. Well, let's play some clips. We have some clips. And they start with this one. About burial etiquette.
Could be considered inappropriate for a murderer to appear at his victim's burial, detective.
Yeah, the murderer should never come to the victim's funeral.
You should not be invited.
Hello,
you know what else? What? I hope whenever y'all bury me, because we're going to have a big film sack funeral, right?
Of course.
Right. Because I'm going to be the first to go. Anyway, when you guys bury me, I want to make sure that you guys have my most menacing look that y'all guys can put on a photo so that we can put that up like at the grave site.
Now I understand why every time you send us a selfie,
right? It looks so menacing and angry.
Yeah.
Because I want everybody at my funeral to realize how angry I was.
Of course.
Right.
It makes perfect sense to me. Why wouldn't you? So, and this movie really laid that out for us nicely. I like this guy, and he kicked a Pepsi machine, so I'm going to play his clip.
I try not to use it too much because she's a pain in the ass. You know what I mean? Her name's Meg Coburn.
Meg Coburn?
Yeah, she's in the Olive Building, you know? I'll hook you up in the morning. Where are you going to be?
She's a real pain in the ass. You know what I mean?
Right.
What does that mean? I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
Yeah, I don't know what you mean.
Is she, she's hard to work with. Her personality's caustic. She actually puts a spiked tube up your ass. Like, what is wrong with this lady and why is she a pain in your ass?
By the way, I don't
she
like
it. She wears Victoria's Secret all the time. Oh,
you know what I mean?
I hate that woman.
Ah, you know what I mean.
Decorates a house with film reels, empty film negatives.
She barely dressed 90% of the time.
Every single step on her stairs is loose.
Yeah. Creak. Here's something about... this is what he wants more than anything.
I want forged documents to China.
To China.
Why am I suddenly reminded of Rocky?
Because of this.
I must break forged documents.
All right. What else we got here? This is sage advice from the master.
We shouldn't be chasing our problems, Mr. Coburn. We should be solving them.
Yeah. That guy was on MASH like 50 times, that guy. All up in MASH. Times. Yeah.
And boy, does he speak in platitudes that are obvious.
Yeah.
Like, if this was a drinking game, that guy, you know, you could easily construct a drinking game where every time that guy speaks, it's, platitude drink.
Platitude drinking game. How about this one? Merle talks for the first time.
Swindle, bad checks, mail fraud, no heavy felonies here. Still, what you lack in weight, you make up for in volume. 12 arrests before you sweet 16. It's a little unusual for a girl of that age to be in that much trouble, don't you think?
Well, I've always considered myself a feminist pioneer.
Yeah. Do you ever, some of his words end like this. Like that.
Yeah. Sounds even like there's a fart. Fart in the middle of one of the sentences.
I thought it was too.
Well, let's play it again because now I want to know.
At the very beginning.
Torture us with Michael Rooker's voice. All sure. Right.
One more time. Here we go.
Swindle, bad checks, mail fraud, no heavy felonies here.
There it is. Right there. That's what I thought too. Yeah.
That's amazing.
What? Okay, so other than his standard character where he's a moonshine runner in some Redneckville, his voice doesn't lend itself to anything, right?
No,
it's ever appropriate.
No, but it's so unique to him, though, that it's become, Like that guy, you just know that guy the minute you see him. He has left a mark and you can't forget it. And so whatever he's in from here and forever, that voice, all of it just brings back, that's Michael Rooker. He owns that space. There are no other Michael Rookers. You can't confuse him for another guy.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, we got the big Senate report on CIA torture. And one of the things everybody latched onto was the list of songs that were used. Yeah.
I was waiting for this to come up on right. FilmSec.
Michael Rooker's voice should have been used.
Blare that on speakers in front of the compound.
I like his voice. I got no problem with it.
I don't hate it. I just think it's unique.
Yeah.
I think it's fine.
Yeah. He sounds like he screamed into a pillow a lot or something.
Right, exactly.
Which is what Mira Sorvino did for this movie.
Like if he raised his voice just a tiny bit, it would crack like Peter Brady in the Time to Change song.
Mike Looking Land. Wait, that's not Peter.
Yeah. No, that was
Bobby.
The growing up Brady guy. Yeah.
He's the one I kicked his trash can over when he lived in Holiday, Utah. Anyway, long story.
Just saying, oh, really? If I had to share a cell the rest of my life with someone whose voice was Michael Rooker or someone whose voice was Donald Duck?
Christopher Knight.
I'm going to go with, I'd take Merle over Donald Duck. Donald Duck would drive me crazy.
Sure.
I couldn't do it.
I would kill myself. Michael Rooker is, it's unbearable at times.
Wow. All right. Well, there you have it. Good thing he's not on that Walking Dead anymore there.
Oh yeah!
Oh,
what?
Spoiler! We don't have to. We're not calling Vince Gilligan on this one. That was like two seasons ago or whatever. All right, here's a '90s gangster guy.
What you mean that's all you got, fool?
Foo? What's up, foo?
Why y'all tripping, yo?
Tripping,
loco.
Clifton Gonzalez.
Don't be tripping. Don't be tripping.
Don't be tripping.
Make a shake. Oh, making a shake. All right. This is his kid. This is great.
Dad.
What are you up to there?
Making a shake. Listen to this.
I'm the worst kid ever. I'm gonna hold the phone.
The kid has the same voice.
He does.
I'm gonna hold the phone to the blender.
They found a kid who also has a raspy voice.
The only thing he's ever done, by the way, is this movie. That was it. He's cute. He's a cute kid. He was all right.
He was not cute. He was the most annoying kid, and I was like rooting for
him. No. You take. Oh, that's terrible. I would take this kid over the Rocky's kid. Rocky from Rocky IV's kid, okay. Any day. Any day of the freaking week. Oh, I hate that kid. But this one,
Listen to this.
Listen to this.
Okay, look. Michael Rooker is trying to talk to his wife and this little turd. Let me make a shake.
But you know how kids are.
Yeah, that's actually quite realistic.
Yeah, my kids were all into like, Dad, look what happens if I, push this over or whatever it is. It's just they're into the thing that's like to us is mundane and silly, but to them it's like you can hear the shake being made. So I totally bought into that. It's fine. And then his dad later went, Listen to this. And then farted. All right, here's a get up yell. It's a good yell. We like yells on the show, so here's one.
Get up.
Here you go.
Get up.
Get on up.
It was a little James Brown going on there.
Get on up.
That was Mira Sorvino saying,
get up!
Telling someone to get up. I think she was telling Loco to get up. That's what it was. Here's Mr. Magoo.
Hello. Do you read me? It's Green Man calling Blue Devil.
Blue Devil.
Does Jim Backus get royalties, or does the estate of Jim Backus get royalties from the Replacement Killers?
It all goes to Lovey. She still gets all of
Lovey.
Let's see. Pain and Thunder. So here you go.
Makes sense.
Anytime you apply ancient Chinese powder in anything, and it happens in Arrow 2, it suddenly is stormy out.
Yep.
And the lightning has an effect.
But he has such a terrible yell. It's an awful yell.
It's Freaky Friday, too.
Yep.
Anytime you do Freaky Friday.
Here's a why so serious moment.
There's a difference between battle and suicide.
It would be the last day of that course.
Fair enough.
That's a trope scene, too. The girding for battle.
Yes.
I'm always
I need a...
You want to know where I got this Victoria's Secret underwear?
No.
No, I don't. All right, how about this one?
Just keep doing what you're doing.
This is the only thing Trejo said the entire film. It's the only line they gave him. Danny Trejo had a gun to the back of his head, and he said,
"Check me."
Check checkmate, and then Machete was out of there. And you could barely even hear it. Checkmate. The music's louder than he is.
I feel like Danny Trejo might be the actor who is most common to film sackable movies.
Ooh, where does this put him on the most sack list?
Oh,
too?
I wonder, yeah.
I just can't think of a Danny Trejo movie that I don't want to watch with you guys, is what I'm
saying. I agree. Yeah. We've seen him a bunch of times. I don't think he's...
This will put him in second place tied with Schwarzenegger. He's at six right now.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't realize he was that high.
Ooh, and Sylvester Stallone, as of last week, will be tied in there as well. So.
Yeah, we got a bunch of sixes. So we got Stallone, Van Damme, David Patrick Kelly somehow, Danny Trejo, they're all tied for six currently, but that'll put Trejo and Stallone tied at seven with Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm.
Eight goes to Peter Jason. I still don't know who Peter Jason is. I really don't. Hold on.
That is so sad, especially if he's listening right now and he's just like,
these guys have watched me so much.
Oh, he is always a smaller part. That's why.
I always listen to Film Sack.
He just has an agent who will get him into everything.
Oh, I know him. I'm looking at him now. I totally know who this is.
Who's the Asian guy that jumps out in the back street when Chong and Fat is chasing the car down? He's trying to shoot, and random Asian guy comes out, but he's been in a whole bunch of movies.
Oh, I don't know.
That's not a walrus mustache guy, is it?
No.
That
wasn't him in this movie.
No, I'm talking about he's really skinny, got kind of long hair usually.
Mm-hmm.
Never says anything. I don't know.
I can answer this question.
Oh, yeah. Al Leong is who I was thinking of. Yeah.
When I saw him, I was like, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. You know what? It is Al Leong.
Oh, is it really? Oh, you're freaking kidding me.
I just zipped forward to that exact spot.
You have to be. You are joking.
That's Al Leong.
That guy is amazing. Wow.
Looking at Al Leong, and he in the it says uncredited on IMDb under replacement color.
Well, here's the problem. He's going uncredited too much. I think he'd be right up in this list.
Oh, yeah.
If he wasn't so uncredited. Yeah. Because we've seen him in so many things. That's amazing.
And when we finally get around to watching Bill and Ted, we're going to see him again.
Yeah. Oh, I watched that like 3 weeks ago.
Ugh. Damn it, Scott.
Ugh.
We need an Al Leong action figure.
Stop preempting our movies.
I didn't know that was on the list. It shouldn't be.
He needs
bad.
To be in a movie where he gets an action figure made of him.
Did you guys know the most voted movie for us to watch is Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome?
Really?
Oh, love it.
Yeah.
Is it streaming?
Dread. I don't know.
We should wait until the new one comes out and do it.
Who
the same
runs
week.
Bada Town?
Here, only
the first one is streaming.
Yeah. Here are the top four most requested film sack movies that we sack, according to mostsack.com. And I don't know where these votes are coming from. But anyway, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, Dread, The Stuff, Repo Man, 84 is Repo Man, and Inner Space. From 1987.
Yeah, oh, all those are great contenders.
There's a bunch of others.
I don't know what The Stuff is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
Soylent Green's on this list.
I'm sorry that none of those are in our upcoming list. I'll run them down for you when we get to the end of the show, but
right.
I'm working on it.
We'll get there. That's your last clip. That means it's time for the trusty old checklist, which starts right here. Many Bullets, check. The Full Rooker, check. Grimacing Danny Trejo, check. Got that one as well. Star Trek connections include Patrick Kilpatrick, who played Price. He was also on Minority Report. He was on an episode of DS9, Voyager, and Voyager again. All different characters each time. Clifton Collins Jr. played
Gonzalez,
Loco.
Gonzalez
played Loco. He played AL, the Romulan cohort and general, to Eric Bana's Nero in J.J. Abrams' Star Trek reboot.
Isn't that Al?
What, Al, what?
You said A-L?
Oh, it's just A-Y-E-L. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I'd say A-L or A-L. Mm-hmm. A-L, maybe?
A-L.
A-L.
It's A-L.
Soundtrack great. I'd give it an NTG for not that great. The action scenes, anyway. I think there was some good flavor stuff in there. Obviously, the stuff from, what's the name of that group? Not Sticky. The thing where she makes me want to kill, she makes me want to kill myself or whatever that song is.
Yeah, what was that?
Swifty, Slippy.
Tricky. I don't think that was Tricky, though.
That is Tricky. I looked it up.
Oh, I love Tricky.
I like Tricky a lot. That's a really cool song, and the Crystal Method stuff is great, but the actual like action scene stuff is super throwaway.
Wasn't he the fake Corbin Dallas?
Tricky? Oh, yeah. No, different dude.
And I would like to argue with you. There were several moments in this movie where I was like, This is such a great Eric Serra score. And I actually found myself muttering that and like, Eric Serra. And I went and looked it up and it's not Eric Serra. And I was really shocked because it felt like this was like the second part of like the Fifth Element or something. Like actually a little more like Leon the Professional. And at like the whole time I'm thinking, I'm going to go pick up another Eric Serra score after I finish watching this movie. I thought this was a great soundtrack.
Yeah. And by the way, Brian, you're right. It is the guy.
It was Tricky.
Tricky's totally from that.
I'm Corbin Dallas.
Yeah, that guy's great. He's a weird looking dude in all the right ways.
He is.
Twitter post cool time looking. For you guys. Sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
The Replacement Killers. John Woo's worst movie, which is really remarkable considering that John Woo had nothing to do with it. 2 stars, one with an Oscar.
Well, other than he produced, but yeah. He was executive producer, but who knows what that meant. He may have just been sitting on his thumbs.
Nothing. Well, he was the guy who said, oh, put shoot opposite ways, side by side. That's
okay, I'm going to lunch. See you next week.
I want to say this again. 2 stars, one with an Oscar.
Nice. That's well done. I liked it. I liked it the first time.
Mighty Aphrodite.
Brian Dunholway.
The Replacement Killers, like a free Pepsi you just kicked out of a soda machine. It's free Pepsi. Don't expect a story. Now y'all tripping.
Yours are so... I love your stream of consciousness Twitter post. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
Mine almost sounds Dunaway-esque. The Replacement Killers sneaks up on you like a helicopter that will blow the cocaine off your knife and then just farts and runs away.
True story.
Wow.
Nicely done.
I didn't like that.
That means we have alternate titles. These just handed to me. Men fighting with guns in suits, or That Monk is Not Bulletproof.
Well done.
He's really on a roll this week. We got an email from Tom Walter. We wrote in and says this. Gentlemen, regarding your Batman episode, I don't know which one of you it was, but I heard one of you fart during a pause between Mr. Deluxe and Mr. Dunaway's introductory monologues. Check the 2 minutes and 17 mark for said fart.
Please tell me you got this.
I do, so I'm going to pull this up. Sorry, it's in a weird place.
So good.
I got to pull this up.
I don't even believe it.
I haven't checked it yet, so I don't want to. So I didn't want
to
have a bias.
So you listened to it?
Yeah, okay. I didn't want to have a bias. So here goes. Batman. This is our Batman episode. I'm going to jump to
Batman right now, but it's 11.
Hold on. That was Randy talking. What did he say? 217 mark. So we're going to put it at 212. Here you go. You ready?
Okay.
Here it goes.
We all know that Batman is out there and he has no soul.
No. None. He's Beetlejuice. Don't say it three times.
He does have rabies, but no soul.
Yeah.
I didn't hear
finally.
It.
Brian.
One more time.
Wait, did you hear it?
Yes.
I didn't hear it.
It's Dunaway going.
Mm. Oh, was it going? Mm.
Okay, here it is at 212 again. Time.
We all know that Batman is out there and he has no soul.
No. None. He's Beetlejuice. Don't say it three times.
None. Does he have none? Is that what that sounds like?
It sounds like a mallard duck farting. Yeah.
You guys hear it now, right?
Yeah, I can hear it, but I think it was just Brian going. Yeah, none or or something. I don't think it was someone farting.
No, it was Dunaway. I thought it was just Dunaway going.
It was a mouth fart.
My mic, I fart plenty on podcasts, but this mic doesn't pick it up. It's not sensitive.
Most people have a cough button. Scott Johnson has a fart button.
It's a little foot pedal thing. No, it won't pick it up. It's like almost impossible.
How do you push a foot pedal and pass a fart at the same time? That sounds difficult.
Well, that is a little hard. Speaking a little bit hard, The Firm. Get it? Firm, hard. Get it? Firm. The Firm is our next episode.
Yes.
And that's exciting. That'll put Tom Cruise back on the map here for
Yay.
Us. I don't know that I ever saw the first, The Firm at all in the theater. I think this is first for me.
Oh, awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah, I haven't done that in a while.
Oh,
so.
We were all over John Grisham in the John Grisham movies in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. I saw The Client. I saw the one with All Right.
Pelican Brief.
Runaway Journey would be awesome.
Runaway Journey.
Yeah.
Don't stop.
I'll have you know we've had to move RoboCop 2 back over to the waiting list. We were going to do RoboCop 2, and it's no longer streaming. And that waiting list is amazing. It's got Armageddon and The Postman and Suicide Kings and Twister.
Yeah, it's a hell of a list.
Yeah, but after The Firm, it's 2015,
yeah.
And we're going to be watching Arachnophobia. We're going to watch Bad Boys.
Yeah.
We're going to watch Jackie Chan's Accidental Spy.
Whoa.
Oh, it's going to be a really good year, guys.
That sounds good to me. And with that, we'd like to say thank you, everybody, for listening to us for the last year and all the years that we've been on the air. It means a lot to us. We really, really appreciate it. It was October of 2009 that the show began. And here we are still kicking it all these years later. So thanks for making 2015 or 2014 even cooler year than it ever could have been. And we really look forward to doing it again in 2015. So thank you, everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's going to do it for us. Filmsack.com is our website address thing. You get on the internet. Filmsack@gmail.com is our email address. On Twitter, you can find us at Filmsack. Leave us reviews. We love that. We love your feedback. Keep that coming. Enjoy the blog. Blah, blah, blah. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy. See you next year.
Free Pepsi.
Free Pepsi.
For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Yeah.